supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
In sports, Temple hosts Louisville at noon. Penn State's on the road. The Nittany Lions meet Purdue at 3:30. Sixers face the Knicks tomorrow, and it's the Eagles and the Saints on Monday Night Football. Checking the long-term forecast, sun today and chilly temperatures, the high about 50. Tomorrow, pretty much the same, sunshine with a high of about 50. Monday, sunny and chilly, the high 48. And Tuesday, Election Day, a few clouds about. Cooler yet, Tuesday's high only about 46. Right now, it is 48 degrees. You're listening to WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, good trees, bad trees. We'll tell you about the best trees that you can use to sustainably harvest firewood from the same tree without having to replant it. We'll also tell you what to look for and what to avoid when planting a tree to shade your house. It's important information. You won't want to miss it. But mostly before that, it's lots of your fabulous phone calls, cats and kittens, at 1-888-346-9499. Larry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, hello. How are you today?
I am doing just fine, Larry. How are you, sir?
I'm okay. I'm enjoying this good Tennessee weather.
Excellent. What part of Tennessee, sir?
I live near Elizabethton, which is in East Tennessee, about halfway between the Virginia and North Carolina border.
Okay. Very good. It sounds picturesque.
A lot of color this time of the year.
So what can we do for you, Larry?
My wife's lawn is overrun with molds, and I guess that's a fairly easy subject for you, but I heard your program the other day, and I just thought I'd call and ask what you could do to tell me to get rid of them.
Oh, it'd be my pleasure. Now, when you say moles, there are two underground creatures that are a little bit similar that people confuse. Moles, M-O-L-E-S, are true underground creatures. They rarely ever come into the daylight. They're blind. They don't eat any plants at all. They're like teenage boys. They only eat meat.
Uh-huh.
And we notice them because they make raised tunnels. They make
That's what we found in our yard and in our garden, the raised tunnels.
And voles, V-O-L-E-S, are nasty little shrew-like creatures that do come above ground fairly often at night. They eat no meat. They only eat plants, and they eat an enormous number of plants, generally the underground plant parts. They're responsible for the roots of hostas and fruit trees disappearing and spring bulbs disappearing.
I'm assuming that we have moles. M-O-L-E-S.
Okay, so moles are a pretty common creature. Moles eat three things, Lair. They eat earthworms, lawn grubs, and they eat cicada larvae. And I don't know about you, but we had a big cicada year. I'm thinking it was a brood emergence. Did you hear the cicadas?
No, we didn't, but I think we got a lot of grubs in our lawn.
Okay, so what's the weather like? And you're saying eastern Tennessee, or
yeah.
You know, you're a little warmer than we are in Pennsylvania.
Oh yes.
Okay,
yes.
You have a unique opportunity here. You can get thee to a garden center, and you got to do this fast. You got to do it while the soil is still warm.
Uh-huh.
There's an organic powder you can apply called Milky Spore.
Okay.
This is a naturally occurring soil organism that if you apply it to soil where there's a lot of grubs feeding and they feed on the roots of your lawn, while the soil is warm enough, all the grub has to do is ingest a single spore, just a microscopic spore. The grub dies and becomes a Milky Spore factory that then infects any other grubs that come into the lawn. It's totally non-toxic to you and everything else in your environment. And unlike chemical grub killers, you only have to do it once.
Okay.
But you have to do it in the late summer, early fall, when the soil is still warm and the grubs are still feeding before they go down and hide in preparation for the winter.
I'm sure I could get this at most any garden center store or...
Yes, any big independent garden center store especially will have Milky Sport.
Okay.
And the other thing, if that doesn't give you any satisfaction, there are castor oil sprays.
I've heard that somewhere some time ago, castor oil.
Yes, but you don't have to try to. It's very hard to find the right kind of castor oil anymore.
Okay.
But they do manufacture products made for mole and vole control, and you'll find these at Better Garden Centers in both liquid and powder form. And you can apply it to your lawn with a spreader or a sprayer, whatever you're more comfortable with. And it literally makes the soil they're living in smell bad. And so the moles and voles go live at your neighbor's house instead of yours. If you want to just be done with this, put down the Milky Spore and then put some castor oil product around. You know, all your neighbors are going to be complaining about mole troubles. And you're going to be saying, yeah, we used to have that. We don't have that anymore.
Well, I hope that's the case because they've been very active this year.
Moles annoy the heck out of people, Larry.
Well, look, I thank you for your information, and I've not listened to your show. I hadn't heard your show too much until just a few weeks ago, and I heard it, and I really liked it. My wife's not listened to you yet, but I'm sure she will. She's really the gardener in our family.
Well, you make sure she listens.
I will.
All right, thank you, Larry.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Barbara, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you.
Well, thank you, Barbara. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And where are you?
Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. What can we do you for?
Well, about 10 years ago, we took down a soft maple when we found out the trunk was rotten, and it was 10 feet from the house.
Okay.
And in the berm that was next to my property, there was suddenly a lot more sunlight. And I had a crop of wild roses that are growing now up now quite high. This fall, I started cutting them down. But as you know, come spring, from the roots, they're just going to pop up again.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to keep them from coming back?
Now, when you say wild roses, I presume you mean the escaped living fence, the multiflora rose.
I don't know if they're the multiflora. They grow about 20. They're 20 feet up into the tree next to them.
And are they relatively insignificant white flowers?
Yes.
Okay. That's the multiflora rose. Not quite wild. It's an invasive species that was deliberately planted in very large numbers. The government urged farmers to plant it as living fence to create barriers between properties, to keep cattle in bounds and things like that. And like many such good ideas, it rapidly got out of control. Well, the big question that always arises whenever this comes up is, what are you going to plant in its place?
Well, this is in a swale next to the property. There's a berm on either side of it. And in heavy rain, we have it's running creek.
Right.
So I've been encouraging periwinkle to grow in there to control erosion and to be something growing there that's less noxious than something else.
Right. We should mention for people who are not graced with it that multiflora rose does have some flowers. Some people like them. It can have an especially elegant scent at times, but it's really thorny and fast-growing, and the canes are all over the place. And it makes an impenetrable thicket. It's a great plant to have between you and a neighbor you don't care for.
Yes.
So your first job is to figure out what you're going to replace it with, because nature abhors a vacuum. And you gave nature a vacuum, and it planted multiflora rose, unfortunately. So if you, no matter what we do to take out the rose, it sounds like birds are going to sit there. Birds will have eaten the hips from other multiflora rose. Birds will do what birds do.
Yes.
And more multiflora rose will pop up. Have you considered replacing it with something equally aggressive but pleasant? Would you be interested in having a raspberry patch back there or blackberries or something?
Well, it's a no man's land. It's not really my property. It belongs to the apartment complex next door, but they don't do anything with it.
Right.
And it is a water runoff area, so I don't want to interfere with the water runoff.
I'll just ask the obvious question. Why, then, do you feel the need to remove the multiflora rose?
Well, it's starting to encroach on my property.
Okay.
On the lot line.
What I would suggest, it may sound like a lot of work, but it would be once and done, is if you're handy, if you have friends who are handy, or you can hire a landscaper to do this, they would trench out the area at the edge of your property line and install what's called a rhizome barrier. And this is what people do to contain really aggressive plants like running bamboo. And it's once and done. You know, the multiflora rose, obviously, if we remove it, there's going to be erosion. It's going to come back. If you install a rhizome barrier, that's like good fences make good neighbors. It'll simply stay on the other side of the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there was room, it sounds like this would be a great place to put a line of ornamental grasses or something, which if they were planted densely enough and correctly enough, they would block the multiflora rose, keep it on the other side, but it would also be something nice for you to look at.
Sounds wonderful.
So rhizome barrier number one, you know, with a situation like this, I always like ornamental grasses because they grow very quickly. They shield the view every month of the year. They're four-season interests. They're beautiful plants. They don't take forever. And there's only one or two, like, aggressive species that you need to avoid. If you buy the plants locally, you'll be steered in the correct direction.
Okay.
All right?
Yes. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll answer your garden questions in person when I host the Empty Bowl Dinner to benefit the homeless at Chestnut Hill College on Wednesday, November 14th. Besides me, guests will enjoy delicious soups donated by area restaurants and choose a nifty bowl handmade by local artisans or school children to take home. Be sure to seek out an Empty Bowl event near you. It's a great way to help ensure that nobody's bowl goes empty. But don't you go search an Empty Bowl benefit just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to choose the right tree for your site and situation. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
You found You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
The Wistar Institute supports WHYY-FM. I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute. The newest cancer treatments almost always start with a breakthrough in basic science research. Wistar researchers identify the causes of cancer, and this can lead to treatments that directly target the causes without the harmful side effects of older cancer therapies. Basic research saves lives and needs your support. To learn more about how you can join us and help save lives, wistar.org.
Bartlett Tree Expert supports WHYY and offers the removal of hazardous trees and scientific treatments including pruning and disease diagnoses. Locations in Montgomery, Chester, and Bucks counties and Cherry Hill, New Jersey. More information at bartlett.com.
Hey, this reminder, on Monday at 1, join WHYY's Dave Davies for a political show you'll like even if you hate politics. Beyond the Ballot, Monday afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, as promised, we will help you choose the perfect tree for your site and situation, and perhaps more importantly, steer you away from some troublesome trees. We'll also have lots more of your fabulous phone calls. But now we're going to do something a little special. We've been trying to reach someone at the University of Delaware about an incident that occurred there recently, and we have the perfect person on the line. So here is an unannounced interview, special for those of you listening today. Professor McKay Jenkins is a professor of English and director of journalism at the University of Delaware, where he has won the Excellence in Teaching Award. Professor Jenkins, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Now, let's go over what happened. This has been in the news lately. Do you want to walk us through what occurred with the lawns and the students at the U of D?
Sure thing. I've been teaching courses on toxic chemicals for a number of years now and ended up actually writing a book about it that included a section about my students being interested in pesticide applications on campus, because I might be teaching a class out on the green and we'll see the guys in their full hazmat suits wandering around spraying things. What I do is ask my students to run towards the guy and ask him what he's spraying. And a couple of years ago when they asked him, he said he was spraying 2,4-D and don't worry about it, because where they were sitting, he had sprayed 5 hours ago, so they didn't have to think about it.
Oh, sure, right, yeah.
So now 2,4-D, in case your listeners don't recognize it, was 50% of Agent Orange and has a long and somewhat sketchy history of health implications. So what's happened in the last week is I've asked my environmental journalism students to go back out there and try to make some inquiries about what is being sprayed, when it's being sprayed, what the laws are, what the university policy is, and they got very few answers for what they were looking for.
But aren't I correct in that the actual inciting incident was whatever they sprayed? Because there were no warning signs, kids were rolling around on the grass like college students will do, and an extraordinary number of them came down with skin rashes.
Well, this became the lead for the articles that were being written. There were all kinds of students when the student reporter went around and asked this question. They all said, yeah, you know, I was out there and I've got these rashes on my arms or my legs. There were stories about ROTC people getting this as well, because they're running around on the grass. And again, on any sunny day, you can see all kinds of kids out there with bare feet or shorts on, and say nothing of faculty members bringing their babies out there to play or their pets. Yeah, that was the precipitating thing. And then again, like all journalists do, they use that initial thing to start asking some questions. And the most frustrating thing about this, both here and nationally, when it comes to pesticides or comes to any kinds of toxic chemicals, is the incredible lack of information that is provided. So there are no labels on this stuff. There are no signs about it. The department doesn't want to reveal what they're using, partially because they know if they do, they may have to change longstanding policies. And I understand it's probably a headache for them, but I really applaud this effort to just simply provide students with information, which is what we're supposed to be doing as a university. So rather than considering this a hassle, you could turn the whole buildings and grounds plant into another teaching tool, which would be great. We're all about watershed improvement and environmental sustainability, and this is a perfect way to turn that to our advantage, I think.
Do you expect the university to finally get religion now that this is being brought out in the open?
Well, you know, I think it's a really good question, and you know, when you talk about sustainability issues at a university, and every university is doing this, University of Delaware is really trying to market itself as a very green place, and it has very visible solar panels, and it's got interest in wind power and all this kind of thing. But it's interesting that they have not yet thought of their grounds as a place that they could manage in a different kind of way, whether you're talking about pesticide management or stormwater management. These seem to be late to the party when it comes to institutional thinking. And as you say, it's not just invasive plant removal, but you know, we have a guy named Doug Tallamy here who has become a real guru on native plants.
He's been on the show many times.
Yeah, so you know, rip up some of the grass and turn it into native plants, and then not sweating the clover so much is a perfectly good thing. Now, and imagine this, how many of the students that go here are from suburban communities in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Maryland, and if you made a point of making the campus a laboratory for organic, or let's just say at least non-synthetic toxic management, these students would learn that, bring it back home to their own communities, and be able to, you know, act in a community public health environmental kind of way, which would you know, ripple out from the university, which seems to me to be the very a model of what we should be doing as professors.
Well, this is an evolving story. This is all coming to light. We're going to follow this story closely. We want to have you back on and announcing that the university has decided to go with a sustainable/organic lawn care program.
I hope I can report that.
All right. Well, we'll be waiting with bated breath.
Okay.
All right. Professor McKay Jenkins from the University of Delaware. He's a professor of English, director of journalism at the University of Delaware, where we'll be keeping our You Bet Your Garden eye on the evolving news out of the U of D. Professor Jenkins, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Shauna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Shauna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you. Where is Shauna Good?
Right now, I'm in Northampton, Massachusetts.
Now, does that mean something's imminent?
Well, I'm working in a garden. I live in Montague, which is about half an hour away.
Okay, very good. What can we do you for?
I'm calling because I am used to gardening here. I've been a gardener here for 10 years. I'm going to be relocating to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and the soil there is very different. I've been there to visit a couple times, and I took soil samples from the house I will be living in and sent it to the UMass lab, and it came back that the alkalinity, the soil's extremely, extremely alkaline, which is not something I'm used to dealing with. As a result, the potassium and phosphorus levels are extremely high, and I was thinking that, you know, I could remedy this by adding a lot of sulfur, but I was wondering if there might be another option where, you know, I could do sulfur and something else that might be able to add a little bit of organic matter or, you know, just mix it up a little.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you that as you move west across the country, and you move into areas, especially of lesser rainfall, the soils tend to be more alkaline. As you move east across the country, especially into areas of high rainfall, they tend to be more acidic. So that's entirely natural. Now, you're going to have a fairly short growing season, aren't you?
Yes.
And what do you intend to grow?
Well, I want to have a veggie garden in one area behind the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can imagine it'll be probably a lot of brassicas and lettuces. And, you know, maybe I'll do tomatoes in pots on the deck. But, you know, I love to have a veggie garden, and I'll grow what I can grow.
Do you know how many growing days you have?
I'm not sure exactly how many growing days. I'm thinking at this point it probably ends for sure by early September.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that this past spring, they still were getting frosts into early June.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, is you are moving into the kind of climate that the Brits and the people in, like, upper Washington State and the San Francisco area, even to some degree, have to deal with. So I know that the Extension Service soil labs can be expensive out in the West, but you know you're going to have to get to know your Extension Service in Wyoming, because there's still an Extension office out there, and there's local offices, and they're going to be your best resource. The short answer is, should you wish to try to change the nature of your outdoor soil, I would start with large amounts of milled peat moss, which is a soil acidifier. Sulfur tends to get pretty dicey in the situation you're in with the alkalinity. I'm not sure sulfur is a viable answer. And I think that's where the people in Wyoming who have to deal with these kind of issues, like our listeners in Oklahoma who have alkaline soil and alkaline water, have to deal with it on a regular basis. You know, you're absolutely right about the brassicas and the salad greens and the things like that you're going to have a lot more success with. I suggest you simply, find a good source of compost and topsoil out there. Build yourself some raised beds. Avoid growing in that Wyoming soil directly the foods that you're going to grow, because they're, by definition, they're totally not native almost to anywhere. There's very few native crops that we grow in our summer gardens to begin with. So to grow them in raised beds and not try to grow in that western soil, I think you'll get remarkably good results. Also, you're moving across the entire continent. You're going to have a lot to do. You're going to have a lot to get adjusted to. So I think building 2 or 3 4x8 raised beds, getting a nice imported soil out there, a nice mixture of topsoil and good yard waste compost and filling those, you'll have a lot of success. For crops like tomatoes or peppers or cucumbers or eggplant, you're going to have to capture heat. You're going to have to build yourself a hobby greenhouse, or perhaps there's a side of the house where you could add a greenhouse kind of type structure where you can gain an extra month, will allow you to grow your own tomatoes and peppers and stuff. Just think of innovative ways to capture heat. You know, start them extra early. Protect them with walls of water early in the season. Have them under row covers the entire season long, even just the first year. And then that second year, try to come up with some sort of a structure.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Good luck on your great adventure, Massachusetts to Wyoming. Good Lord.
I may be calling you again.
Oh, we'll be here. Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Lisa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Lisa. How are you?
I'm doing very good.
And where is Lisa doing good?
I am in Nacogdoches, Texas.
Oh, I love that. Say that name of that town again. I just love that.
Nacogdoches.
So what's going on in Texas?
Well, my husband and I, we have some avocado trees, well, we used to, and I cannot figure out what it is that I am doing incorrectly with these avocados. We get the pits out of just the normal Haas avocados that you get from the grocery store. We'll do the toothpick thing in the mason jar, and you get your roots, and then we'll transplant them into dirt. We have a compost. And we had one that was almost probably 12 feet tall inside of our house. And one day I noticed the leaves were turning brown, and it slowly drooped, and then he just died. And I didn't do anything differently, and I had another one in the house that was beautiful, big green leaves, just beautiful plants, and it rained finally because, you know, in East Texas, when you get rain, you put everything outside. We put it outside to get some rain, pulled it back inside, and it died too. And I don't know what it is that I'm doing incorrectly with these things.
Well, I thought you were going to tell me that you were planting them in the ground outside.
With all the research that I have done, we have a really high mineral because we have that red clay.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that it wouldn't do very well because it's not, temperate, the right word for it, that it's, we have really cold, we get frost, and that would kill them. So we have them outside, but they're in pots so that we can move them indoors when it freezes, and then move them back outdoors.
Right, because avocados can be grown in parts of Florida and Texas. How cold does it get where you are?
Well, not, you know, we're not Alaska cold, but we get cold for us. It gets, you know, 30 degrees one day a year, maybe.
Okay. I was thinking you were going to tell me you were planting these things in the ground and they were dying, and I was going to say that's because it's the wrong variety. The avocados you're buying are obviously tropical avocados, are grown outside the country, more than likely require really tropical climates. But there have been avocado varieties that have been bred for growing in Texas and Florida. But you have to grow that specific variety. You can't be cheapo and grow it from a pit. You have to go out and buy the tree at like a local garden center to make sure it's locally adapted. I think you should investigate that. Now, the biggest cause of death in house plants is overwatering or sudden temperature changes or being near a hot air register or some other kind of forced air. So when you grow these avocados and you get good roots on them, they live for a while, right?
Yes, the big one that we had in the house, which I was so just despondent when it I guess, passed away.
What time of year did it die?
It died over the summer.
It died over the summer. Did the house get hot? Did air conditioning come on?
Yes, we kept the air conditioning on.
Was it exposed to the air conditioning breeze, though?
Yes, it was.
See, and it sounds like this is the perfect place for it.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, can you block that duct and still air condition your house?
I might. I would probably just move the plant.
So I will tell you, do this again. Make the mixture in the pot, two-thirds mm-hmm. of a soil-free mix, a nice light bag potting soil, and mm-hmm. one-third compost. No plant food of any kind.
Okay, no plant food.
Make sure you have a light hand with the watering. It is easier to bring back a dry plant than it is to revive a drowned one. Everybody mm-hmm. knows that plants need water, but they also need to dry out between waterings. Typically, these plants want to have bright light and be 10 to 20 degrees cooler at night than they are during the day, but not to have any hot or cold air blowing on them. That can be the cause of death.
Okay.
That's the best I can tell you. If you want to try it again, keep it away from those big temperature changes.
Well, now I've got another 6 years before I get a big plant, but they're just lovely to have in the house. And I'm not trying to get fruit off of them. I just think they're really pretty to have around.
All right, well, and if you want the fruit, look at the outside varieties.
Absolutely.
You can hurt plants indoors and out.
Yeah, so I have a lemon tree that's out back and that does really, really well.
Oh, no, then definitely you can plant an avocado outside.
Okay.
Just get the right variety. Get it locally.
Right. Definitely.
All right, Lise?
Thank you so much.
All right, good luck.
Okay, bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everyone who's getting ready to plant tulips, crocus, and other spring bulbs that vermin find eminently edible to be sure and clean up all your bulb trash after you're done planting. And then spray deer repellent or spread dog hair on the bed to disguise the scent of the tasty treasures from voracious voles and evil squirrels. But don't go grooming your golden retriever to achieve springtime success just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and trees to look for and trees to avoid. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers gift certificates, both traditional and e-cards, that can help make holiday giving easier. Burpee gift certificates are available online at burpee.com.
Mike has more of You Bet Your Garden in just a moment here on WHYY.
The Geographical Society of Philadelphia supports WHYY and presents a season of film, adventure, and food from around the world. Society events run through May at various Philadelphia and mainline venues. The four-day GeoFest begins November 7th with the National Geographic Genographic Project and ends with the Digital Nomads Journey from D.C. to Antarctica. Information at geographicalsociety.org or 610-649-5220. The Geographical Society of Philadelphia. It's almost like being there.
Natural Lands Trust supports WHYY. With the help of its members, Natural Lands Trust has preserved more than 100,000 acres of the region's most beautiful landscapes. Information about how your support can keep our communities green for future generations and details about outings, volunteer opportunities, and nature preserves are available at natlands.org. Natural Lands Trust. Land for life.
Forecast, we should see partly sunny skies today and a high of about 50. Right now it's 49 degrees.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in this stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. What are the best trees to grow if you burn wood for home heat and if you need to cool your house passively in the summertime? More importantly, what are the trees to avoid for those purposes? We'll tell you right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Rob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Rob. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And you?
I am doing okay today, holding my own. Where is Rob okay?
I am in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay, very good. A pleasure to speak with you. Rob, what can we do you for?
Well, 3 springs ago, I got volunteered to start a community garden in the inner city in downtown Cincinnati.
Oh, good for you.
And it's been a lot of fun, but it's also had some challenges. And I've done a lot of gardening over the years, but I've not done heavy vegetable gardening, and I haven't started with the kind of soil I started with here, and I was hoping you'd give me some advice on how to deal with the soil as I go forward.
Are you seriously growing in the soil that was on site?
Yes, and we had it tested by the local agricultural extension, and they said it was clean of any heavy metals or lead or any of that kind of stuff, so we had that done.
Okay,
there
good.
A house, and the house had burned down, and they filled it basically with sand and clay.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not the worst thing you could have started with.
My garden is a plantable area of about 20 foot by 60 foot.
Okay.
And two falls ago, a friend of mine who runs a lawn care business dropped about 10 cubic yards of tight-packed, chopped-up leaves, which we spread about 6 inches thick over the entire garden and then tilled it in. We tilled it again in the spring.
Okay, don't do that again.
Well, I was going to say, we did it again last year. And had another 6 inches tilled in. But I haven't done anything, and now it's getting to the time where I would potentially do it a third time this year. I heard you on the radio. I thought, I'm going to call and see what Mike suggests I should do, if I should keep doing this or do something different.
Yeah. No. You're only doing two things wrong. The first is tilling, and the second is tilling leaves into the soil. Other than that, it's a perfect plan. One of the issues, tilling creates weeds, which I'm sure you've noticed. Even with this imported soil, I'm sure it was harboring tons of weed seeds. And every time you till up the soil, even though Americans are addicted to tilling, you release soil nutrients, you expose the weed seeds to sunlight, which is the trigger for germination, and then what do? You cover them with soil, right? You water them, you feed them, and you're shocked when all these weeds come up. Second, leaves are a great source of plant nutrition. Used correctly, leaves are the only thing that you really need to nurture a garden along. But they are very highly carbon, and it's the same as tilling sawdust or wood chips into the soil. When you till a carbon-rich material into the soil, it ties up the nitrogen. In other words, any plant food that's in the soil is attracted to the wood and tries to help the wood break down into better soil. But in the meantime, that plant nutrition is not available to the plants. So I've got a much better plan for you, and I would hope that they're going to keep dropping these leaves off for you.
They will if I ask.
Yes. So what the leaves need to have done to them is they need a dedicated place of their own where they can be piled up and left to cook down. You're talking about a monumental amount of leaves that arrives in a very large truck filled to the top, right?
Right, correct.
So you want to duplicate that truckload on the ground somewhere and just leave it alone, because by definition, you'll be getting this in the fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let the leaves cook down, and then in the spring, when you're ready to plant the beds, and I presume you've got the garden broken up into raised beds or at least dedicated areas with walking lanes in between.
We just have a big open 20 by 60, and we just kind of lay in our own rows by eye and plant it in a big contiguous area.
It would be very good if you could make dedicated lanes so that people were not always walking on the roots of their plants. It may seem like a non-issue, but soil compaction is the second biggest human cause of plant death. The first is overwatering. We'll always kill our plants with kindness before we do it with our boots, but the boots are the second. So it would be good to create streets and, you know, stoplights so that people aren't walking around, and ideally break the planting areas up into areas that are no wider than 4 feet. So that people aren't stepping on the planting areas. You'll double your production by simply not walking on the areas where the plants are growing. Matter of fact, that's where the need for tilling often comes in, because people are compacting the soil with their boots. If you create these 4 foot wide areas where nobody walks, you never have to till again, and the soil stays nice and loose. So in the spring, you'll attack that leaf pile, and you and a bunch of volunteers will move all the stuff on the tops and the sides off. On the bottom, about a third of that pile will have become rich black compost. Spread that just directly on top of your planting areas. There's no need to till it in. And then put the plants or the seeds, whatever, you know, directly into that rich 2 inches of compost. And then after the plants are up and established in a decent size, use the shredded leaves to mulch them to keep moisture in the soil and prevent weeds. And you'll probably still have a bunch of leaves left over in a big pile. Well, as the season progresses, as the summer warms up, the bottom will become compost even faster. You move the pile over again, and you'll have another ton of rich black compost. And that's a sustainable system that you can use to keep your plants healthy. 2 inches of compost is all the nutrition, even the heaviest feeders, except for like sweet corn, are going to need right. during a season. Shredded leaf mulch will, believe it or not, bring earthworms back to the area. And you'll never need fertilizer or mulch of any kind. Just get a big load of leaves dropped off every fall. Handle it the way I've described. It'll be a perfect circle. And the more you can keep people from not walking on the roots of their plants, the doubly better the results will be.
Okay.
All right, Rob, good luck, and thank you for doing this good work in Cincinnati.
Thank you very much, Mike.
1-888-346-9499. Kathy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well today. Kathy, how are you?
I'm very well.
And where is Kathy very well?
I'm very well in South Jersey.
All right. What can we do for Kathy in New Jersey?
I have several trees that are in buckets that have been growing in buckets for 10 to 12 years. Some people tell me they will not live if I try to put them in the ground. There's a sour cherry tree, there's an apple tree, and there's a Chinese chestnut tree, all of which look pretty healthy in the buckets. And I want to know, what's the likelihood of a tree like that being able to survive if we take them and plant them around in our yard or hire someone to do that?
Well, the likelihood is exponentially greater than them having survived in buckets.
Okay.
The book would say that plants with their roots above ground like that are going to die on the first freezing cold winter. How big are these? Just like 5-gallon painter buckets?
Right, big white plastic buckets.
And where
the trees have grown to, one of them looks to be maybe 8 or 9 feet tall. Maybe a 2-2.5-inch diameter trunk.
Where are these buckets in proximity to your home?
Oh, about how far from the house are they, Matt? 10 feet, maybe?
Oh, no, 25 feet.
He says 25 feet.
It's astounding that you have had this much success. But the God's honest answer is they will do better in the ground, and this is a great time of year still to be planting them in the ground.
Okay, good.
What you want to do is, and obviously it sounds like you're going to get some help, make sure that whoever plants them digs a wide hole, but not a deep one. We know how far these roots go down. They can dig a hole to the exact height of a 5-gallon bucket. They can use a 5-gallon bucket as kind of a template.
Okay.
Do not refill the hole with anything other than the soil you remove. Don't improve the soil in the planting hole. And I'm going to suggest that these buckets are cut off. I don't think you're going to be able to turn the trees on their side and get them out of the buckets. But if you can, God bless you, because so far I would say you couldn't have done anything you've done. Drop them into the new planting hole. Refill it with the old soil. Make sure the trees are planted high, not low. In other words, you want to see the root flare above ground, where the trunk of the tree meets the root system. You want that You want that little bit of the top of the root system to be showing. And then after that, just mulch around them with a little compost or shredded leaves. Don't do any wood mulch or anything like that. And for the first year that they're in the ground, make sure that they get a deep watering at the ground level. Any week we don't get rain, just leave a hose drip at the base of each tree for like a couple of hours, but just dripping just once a week if we go through a dry stretch. Treat them like new trees for the first year in the ground. I expect they're going to wake up in the spring and just love the fact that they finally got out of that tiny apartment and could afford to buy a house.
I hope you're right.
All right, Kath, continued
thank you
good
much,
luck.
Mike. That's a big help.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we're calling good trees, bad trees, or the problem with poplars. We got two questions this week. You Bet Your Garden producer Alexis Landis, read us off the first one, please.
Sure. Well, we heard from Steve in Beaver Creek, Ohio, who writes, "What is your opinion of hybrid poplars? I've read that they grow very fast, can provide firewood in 4 to 5 years, and that if you cut the tree and leave the stump in the ground, it will grow another tree that will provide more firewood in another 4 to 5 years. What do you think?"
Well, the technique of cutting and recutting the same tree for firewood is an essential element of the alley cropping system that the late Bob Rodale championed as a way to help combat soil erosion in the Third World. "If you plant trees that regrow after cutting," he explained, "there would always be working roots in the ground to hold soil in place and manage stormwater. The growing trees would function as windbreaks, and if you choose members of the legume family, their nitrogen-rich leaves and branches can be used as an excellent plant-feeding mulch or compost ingredient. So while the basic idea here is sound, your choice of tree is not. All poplars produce a fairly soft wood that is far from ideal for heating. You can tell just by splitting it that it's more like paper than a true hardwood. And hybrid poplars have the added non-distinction of being named, quote, one of the 11 trees you should never plant in a list that was just released by the National Association of Realtors. Bred to be cheap and fast-growing, these brittle trees are incredibly short-lived." We'll post a link to the complete list of losers with this question of the week. So instead, I'm going to suggest one of Bob Rodale's favorite alley cropping trees for the U.S., the black locust. It grows quickly, regrows from stumps, and sends up suckers that grow into full-size trees. Its hard, dense wood is prized for home heating, and its natural rot resistance also makes it a great choice for wooden structures that come into ground contact, like compost bins, raised bed frames, fence posts, and trellises. And because it's a legume, the leaves and small branches are rich in plant-feeding nitrogen, and it blooms brilliantly in the spring, producing flower clusters that smell like orange blossoms. Honeybees love the flowers, and the honey they produce after visiting a black locust is highly prized for its rich flavor. A little internet hopping also suggests that the hornbeam would be another excellent choice as a regenerative firewood tree. It's very attractive, regrows from cut stumps, and produces a hard, strong wood that's said to burn especially slow and hot. Just be aware that these are not trees for close quarters. Any tree that regrows from a stump and/or sends up shoots and suckers can become an invasive problem. But if well-sited and well-managed, a tree like the black locust can provide wood for fires and structures, excellent erosion and wind control, and food for plants and bees. Not too shabby.
We also heard from Dustin in Spokane, Washington, who writes, "A good buddy of mine has decided to remove a cottonwood tree that invades the pipes around his home so aggressively that he has to have them cleaned 2 or 3 times a year, despite the trunk of the tree being a good 40 feet away from the pipes. But he really likes the shade it provides during our short but hot summers and wants to get a replacement. I suggested a conifer because I never heard of one attacking pipes, but he wants a deciduous tree. Any suggestions on deciduous trees that won't attack pipes or foundations?"
Sure, but they won't grow nearly as fast as that cottonwood, which is another member of the often notorious poplar family. Nothing comes without a price, and the price for a well-behaved tree is often slow to medium rate of growth. Conversely, the faster a tree grows, the more aggressive the root system and/or the weaker and shorter-lived the tree. A lot of homeowners latch on to the promise of instant shade and wind up paying massive bills for sewer line cleanings and tree removal because they didn't realize that the words fast growing actually mean big trouble. If you want shade faster, start with a bigger, older tree. It'll cost more up front, but could save you thousands in the long run. Now, the worst pipe attackers are willows, sweet gum, poplars, many of the maples, and some of the oaks. I combined recommendations on well-behaved trees with a list of drought-resistant varieties for your unusual Spokane climate from the Washington State Extension Service, and I came up with Redbud and Fringe Tree as your top choices. If the tree can be watered in the summertime, you can add Japanese maple and dogwood to the list. But before you accept a short list from somebody on the other side of the continent, I urge your friend and every homeowner to contact their local county extension office before they choose a tree. They have the local knowledge and experience that can help you select the perfect tree. Oh, and tell your friend to see if that piping needs repair before a new tree goes in. When tree roots clog a pipe, it's often because the pipe was leaking water and attracting the roots, not because the bad tree attacked the pipe. Well, that sure was some interesting information about your arboreal options now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over at your leisure and follow the links to obtain even more information. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to plant me next to some leaky pipes if I don't get out of this studio. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse team towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Like us on Facebook. Put the actual subject on the subject line. Like us on Facebook. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and or like us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Bob Alls. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar are our illustrious internet illuminati. Well-rooted Amanda McGrath is our social media director. The always well-behaved Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Fast-growing Joanna Hatzis and Brett Rader are our production assistants. Also able to regrow from a stump is our esteemed editor, Al Banks. I'm invasive, aggressive, and unsuitable for just about any landscape situation, Mike McGrath. And yet I'll see you again next week.
In fusty fashion, Mike helps us to finagle fantastic fragrance and fanciful flavor from fruit and other flora. So join us for You Bet Your Garden Saturday mornings at 11 here on WHYY. The Splendid Table is up next, and then at 1, it's Fresh Air Weekend. Katie Segal is our guest. She played Peg Bundy in the sitcom Married with Children. And also author Sherry Turkell talks about how digital devices have altered our lives. Join us for Fresh Air Weekend at 1 today.